it's there is a conscious element there that we're working with all the time, and perhaps at the very foundation of a healthy soul is a healthy awareness, a healthy consciousness.
Of just how transient this nature is, the nature of who we are at this moment in this body and in this form. And it does continue. But before someone can truly embrace that, they need to know that that is even their truth or even who they are. And that's where I think your poetry and this form of communication is so important. If they don't have the opportunity to sit with themselves, be in the silence, and not fear it, they may never even taste that. There's so many distractions in our society. It doesn't encourage that deep reflection. So they're in fear. And in that fear, they can't feel, they can't hear.
Well, certainly you know about a lot about that because you work in the hospice, right? And maybe for some of these people, it's the first time that they've really gone deep into these questions.
Or don't, or choose not to.
Or not to, or choose. Yeah.
And it's important, too, that we transition to our young people, to our children, and let them start to understand this truth in themselves at an early age. You know, it reminds me of this book I'm reading right now called The Education of Little Tree, which is about a Cherokee boy that gets his parents pass on, and he goes and lives with his grandparents in the wilderness, and they're a mixed blood, you know, white blood and Cherokee blood, and he teaches them, and what comes to mind is there's part of the story, Little Tree has this area that's where he goes just by himself, him and his dog, and it's his silent place, and it's this place where he can connect with nature all around him. He goes into these wonderful details of how he's watching this spider trying to, you know, spin its web, and just it really brings you into the moment, and then you know, how the sacredness of that and how it really helped him feel connected in that silence. And then right after, then his grandmother comes walking by, and he says, oh, you know, I've got to go share this with my grandmother, this secret place. I can tell her. So he runs to her and he says, you know, this is my secret place, and you know, I wasn't sure whether to share it with you, but you know, is this okay? And she says, absolutely. You know, I have a silent place, and it's the Cherokee people's way to have these silent places. And so from there, she says, you know, you have two consciousness. There's two parts of yourself. And one of that, in its duality, it brings us back to what we're talking about here with consciousness. You know, are we going to focus? And what she says is, if you focus on the negativity or greed or possession or taking from others to gain for yourself, that you're going to feed that, you're going to experience that, and that's one side of yourself. And there's another side of yourself that is connected to all things, that is beyond your body, that is the creator, that is a manifestation of the infinite. And depending, and when you connect to this, it's through the silence, it's not through the noise, it's not through the words. And so this silent place that you go to is so important for you to connect with that side of yourself, because what happens is when you pass on, depending on which life you led, that will predetermine how you come back. And in this particular writing or way of believing, the Cherokee people believes that you come back. You know, you come back and to the earth again. And depending on how you lived your life before, you're gonna be more. You're gonna have a higher tendency to give in to whatever consciousness you fed before, and you're gonna have to fight even harder to get back to that place. And she said how if you give your energy to the negativity and to the focus of self and to that dark road, that you're going to come back and maybe the consciousness of the goodness will be the size of an acorn, she says. And then she says if you live a life like that again and you come back, maybe that goodness will be the size of a pea. And you're going to have to work even that much harder. And eventually, you're going to come back and you're going to be the walking dead. And that's where you're walking around and you just have no choice and you're a complete victim to your circumstances because of your perception of life. And she says, to the contrast of that, you could give your energy to the goodness, to the connection, to the self that is beyond yourself, to be in that silence, to connect with all your relatives here on Earth, the sky, the trees, the animals, the birds, you know, everything. And you eventually can get to a point in her story here that you can remember your past lives, and you're able to pass on when you choose to pass on, and that you're able to heal the people and bring these teachings back because you chose to focus on that part of that is beyond yourself, that is connected to all things. And you know, this story, I think, plays very true to what we're talking about here, which is, you know, it's up to us ultimately. What are we going to choose to give our energy to? You know, and depending on those choices, we're going to create our experience. So
now,
thank you.
What I've come to the conclusion, I'm 63 years old and been through the ringer, been to the heights, been to the depths. And I've come to the conclusion that we are not here as human beings to transcend duality. But this is a playground, and every polarity represents a continuum. And along that continuum, for instance, love and hate. Along the continuum of love and hate is every possibility of those emotions, every blend, mm-hmm. every texture. If we experience the whole continuum of love-hate, which you can't really talk about only love mm-hmm. and only hate. Me, I'm tricky. I wrote a book about beauty. Because I see beauty as transcending it all. Just a pat on the back from Great Spirit saying, you can be here. Go ahead. Learn as much as you can. One continuum, another, all of the continua. You're moving across them or balancing like a teeter-totter or running like a little rat along the teeter-totter back and forth, having these experiences. And what we're doing is doing something like weaving a tapestry of experience that becomes very beautiful because we have embraced the love-hate continuum and we know what it is. Well, if you haven't hated, how can you know compassion? Do you think compassion just comes from only love? Or does it come more deeply from being the world's greatest fool? You know? Foolishness, enlightenment, intelligence. There's so many continuums, mm-hmm. right and wrong, mm-hmm. you know? Alone, together. These are our teachers. And what you will, and the next poem is actually right what you were talking about. It's my effort to be able to answer the question, what is our nature? Because here we are, we have an earthly component or a human component, and that includes the whole of evolution. That mm-hmm. includes the 10,000 campfires we've sat in front of over 100,000 years. And you know,
they're right in front of us.
Yes. And those experiences that are at a cellular level, active, even, you know, as we're in gestation, there's a point where we have gill slits in our throats. We're like, we're all
the fish.
Yeah. We're basically telling the story of human evolution. Through, as the processes in our gestation inside the womb, you can see it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I maintain is that the experience, the voyage. Now imagine a river. You know how a river goes, like I said, it was like the ribbon, the silver ribbon, the snake. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's duality too. You're one bank to the next bank, and it's like a snake that moves across. There's never been a straight river. You know, only the Corps of Engineers make straight rivers. And when they do that, then, you know, New Orleans sinks.
Yes.
You know? All rivers are basically serpentine. Mm. And again, as we look at that, you know, as we look at this dualistic qualities in on our environment, especially our natural environment, they're telling us things. The environment, nature is telling us things, how to be. Night and day, there's a duality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's resist night and stay awake. Do you know how long it takes for someone to die? People, you die after 2 weeks of no sleep.
I've been doing a few overnights in the work I do, and I'm absolutely exhausted. And yet it does flip me into somewhat of an altered state. And there's insight in that, but that's another.
And through the cycles, you know, through these cycles, we get opportunity. And that's the thing, I think, you know, from what I, you know, and outside of getting to come and help host radio shows, I also am in the banking world.
Okay.
And, you know, that has been very interesting experience. It's gone from one where you can really help a large diversity of people to now you really can't. You can only help those who really, to be quite frank, don't need the help in many ways. And, you know, that hurts. And you see the people that are hurting, and you know, we talk about this deeper level of consciousness and these things that are beyond the material, but we also have to acknowledge and be compassionate towards those who are hurting in the material world, because, you know, if you lose your job, you lose your home, you can't afford your home, you don't have family to go move into. What do you do? I mean, we're hearing these horrible stories of, you know, the sheriff showing up to pick up the keys and the tenants committing suicide, you know, and that's just, it's unbelievably heartbreaking to hear that.
And I see it as an opportunity to go beyond our selfishness, to open our hearts. As you were saying, one experience leads to another. A broken heart can open up one to compassion. So, unfortunately, though, what I'm seeing is people being medicated through therapy, taking more medications to dull that pain. But the opportunity...
That's called straightening the river.
Hmm. Yes, it
using
is.
Using pharmacology to straighten the river.
Yes, which it so turns out to...
In these...
The irony of it is it produces the exact opposite of what they want, which is that feeling of gratitude and love.
Maybe we just let the destruction.
Instead, you know, when you're in these dark times, when you feel that... Let me give you another personal experience. I lost my fingers when I was 19 years old, and I was in a vehicle rollover accident. And at the time, you know, I had a choice. I could wallow in my pity, and I could decide that I'm a victim and decide I'm not going to do anything with myself, both spiritually, physically, anything. You know, I could have chose that. But instead, there was something in me that said, you know, that this is as it is, and it's going to be a blessing, no matter how challenging it may seem right now. Mm-hmm. And it actually turned out to be one of the biggest blessings of my life, because I was also in the military at the time. Fresh out of high school. So it stopped me. This was in 1999. And, you know, that's 2 years before we went to war. So what a blessing. You know, what today's challenges turn out to be tomorrow's blessings. And if we can step back from our fears, and like you said, you know, having compassion towards other people, that's part of it. But I think there's also, it goes... We also have to have compassion for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we have to be willing to see what we have, no matter how much it appears that we're losing. I think that's really important, especially, again, for the young people. You know, I just had my first son, my first child, and he's almost 9 months old, and he's beautiful and perfect in every way. And it's so important that he grows up knowing that no matter how chaotic things may seem to be in this material world of convenience, what's really not needed, you know, that he still will have the relationship with the trees, the relationships with the animals, the relationships with his earth mother, and with the people. And that's important because, you know, we learn from history's teachers that you can have everything stripped to you. It is achievable in humankind. We know by the best examples that have come forward. You know, I think of Mahatma Gandhi. I think of, you know, Jesus Christ. I think of Siddhartha, the original Buddha. I think of many teachers that have taught us that you can have every single physical thing stripped away from you, and you still have your breath, you still have your life, and you can choose to be happy. And the sad thing is, in today's society, we actually think that people that are happy without things are crazy. We deem them as not compatible to society. And how sad is that? I think we need to move back to that, because in the shift in consciousness, the shift in focus, now all of a sudden, instead of thinking that there's not enough, instead of thinking that, you know, things are going to dissipate and we all need to take from each other and get it while we can create win-win environments, sustainable economies, sustainable societies that are focused on contribution and compassion and compromise rather than greed. Mm-hmm. So
I wanted to bring back that image of the teeter-totter and the movement along it, and it's moving. There's the rat on there moving along. It's going up and down. Kids are squealing. If we go to the fulcrum of the teeter-totter, that becomes synonymous with meditation. The fulcrum is the part of the teeter-totter that doesn't move. You know? It's the axis point. So if we're cultivating, now this is an interesting thing, because see, I've already put a plug in for skating duality, you know, weaving this, you know, getting to know the continua of experience here in the third dimension. But then in the poem I said, the only thing we're taking with us is some form of consciousness. So here's again a dualistic part of who we are. We have the capacity to transcend with our awareness at the fulcrum, the focal point, and just watch, just witness, give witness to what's occurring, and not be plugged in. That form of detachment, I fully expect I will take that with me when I go. The only, you know, all the other bags and will be empty. That one I'll have maybe clutched in my hand. And yet, the human part of us that chose to take flesh, you know, came here to play the game, came here to learn, to skate all these different polarities so that we could become more whole and more like virtuosos, more experienced. Remember Jimi Hendrix said, are you experienced? So,
have you risked enough?
Yes.
Have you loved enough? Have you?
So anyway, I would you like to hear the second one? Because I do think
it's... I would
it's,
love to.
Remember now, this is this came the same day, the same morning. I did the first one for the park and to share with the park people. And then this other one just squeezed through. Because I was grappling, Sonny, with exactly what you're saying. You know, the silent place, the cultivating of negativities and stuff. And who are we? Who are we as human beings? And it's something that's very special, something that's very, very profound. So again, here's one of, and a lot of my poetry has this quality to it, so... This, until I get another name for this one, this one's entitled, What of Our Nature? And what of our nature? What can we truly say of it? Certainly, we are more than dust. Certainly, more than the baser instincts. And certainly, we're deeper than inspiration. Certainly, we are more real than cheap exhortations to piousness. But in the dark of night, we need the lamp that brings light. It is elegant in its wholeness, the ceramic bowl made from clay, the oil contained within, squeezed from a fissure of the earth, or rendered from the blubber of the deepest diver. Then the wick, the stem, the conduit that connects the dark reservoir with the apex. Here, the mystery of the sparking heavens leaps to ignite the saturated tip. Suddenly, the flame is there, and the light chases the darkness into the shadows. This is who we are. We are lamps of light. This is who we are. The celestial arc of stars meets in the maw of a dark and fertile place. There is nothing left to do but squeeze the slippery fuel from its ancient rendered flesh and light the way forward. We are restless mariners sailing for the far horizon.
Good one.
Oh, boy. That's bomb to the soul. And the restless wild.
It's wonderful. You know, it reminds me, of a story, if that's okay, if I share. You know, I was watching Deepak Chopra, actually. And he was telling his beautiful story of how his daughter says, you know, well, what are we? You know, what are we, Dad? You know, what are we made of? And he says, well, the stars, you know, we're made of the stars, of light. You know, that's what we're made of. And she says, well, what do you mean? He says, well, you know, the sunshine comes down and it feeds the plants. And then the plants are ate by the animals and ate by the people. And then we eat the animals. And that light, that energy, you know, comes to us and becomes us and fuels us. And, you know, we move forward. We live. You know, that's what we are. We're light. So a couple weeks later, they're walking along the beach at nighttime. He's walking with his daughter. And he looks up at the sky. And actually, she looks up at the sky. She pulls on her daddy's shirt and she says, Daddy, look up. The stars want to see themselves.
Yeah.
And what a wonderful thing that, you know, a little girl understood, you know, from what her father had told her, this concept that we are light, and we ultimately we're learning now finally through the idea of quantum physics and some of these wonderful new sciences that, you know, it's all one thing, and it all boils down to what are we underneath it all? We are the same stuff. We are light. Mm-hmm. We are energy that's constantly changing form, that's constantly moving and reinventing itself and moving along that continuum that you talk about and experiencing. And we as humans, what a blessing. You know, what a blessing to have that cognitive awareness, to be able to reflect and be the witness. That's the gift of being human. We're witnesses. And through that witnessing, we can choose to feel. You know, our brothers and sisters, many of the animals, they don't have that choice. They're instinct. They're driven by instinct. We as humans have that ability. And it's unfortunate, I feel, that we as a society have chose to give in to the conformity because it's what appeared to be easier. And it, in some ways, has made things more convenient, but at what price? And what message do we pass on to our children to say, bigger, faster, stronger, sooner, right? It actually, we need to move that consciousness more to what it is, which is let's reflect, let's experience, let's choose, let's sit in what we are, let's be witnesses of the beauty called life. So thank you. That poem's beautiful.
Yeah, I'm also a defender, I'm a protector of whales and dolphins.
Yeah.
And I used to protest and stuff, but I actually went out in the ocean and got around ships that were trying to use low frequency sonar to bombard the whales. Mm-hmm. And so
I was involved in that as well for a while.
And that was in Hawaii that I did that. Mm. But this poem here, somehow there was a time in back in the 1850s or the early 1800s, 1850s, when before electricity, you know, and before natural gas, they used to burn natural gas lights. They burned whale oil in lamps. And somehow I just felt this part of me, this voice, this historical voice. And I'm sure I was there. But this is how we made our light from the oil that was rendered from the blubber of the whale. And
their gift to us.
And you know what? Those folks back then, the people who came across this country, who were the pioneers, then the mountain men, and the you know gold diggers and the mariners who opened all these places up. Those people had something that we, I think I said earlier on that, well, we said it in the prayer that I was hoping and praying that that we could redress the distance that we put between ourselves and our natural environment, our Mother Earth. And you know what I feel is that when you're going to abuse somebody, what you do is you minimize them. And you try to make them into something less than human. And I feel that's what we are doing in the name of our technology and our merchandising,
profit stuff gaining.
That what we have done is that we have demeaned and minimized the earth so that we can rape her. And this is what I think
that
a major reason.
That's deep.
This is a major reason why I want to come out and talk about this. Because I really, these people in this poem, these ancient mariners, these mountain men, the pioneers, these people knew what life was about. And it was tough. And death was never too far away. They had their eyes wide open, you know. And, of course, they were restless journeyers looking beyond the far horizon. You'd have to do that to open up a land, to go to the promised land or whatever.
But you can also be more closely and intimately connected to its gifts. It grew food for you, the mother.
Yes.
So they could see the value and the connection. A cave may have sheltered them in a storm. Who knows? We're not that vulnerable. We have homes built for us. And there was, I imagine, a more of a give and take, an appreciation for that. And we're so far removed.
Yes.
And in many ways,
that's one thing I love about your poetry. And when you were sharing in the last show that I heard you on, I was so deeply touched. I share that love. And I know you do too, Sonny.
Definitely. And I feel that, you know, in many ways, we're seeing a separation in society because, you know, you have, referring back to the people that brought us here, you know, the people that came across this country and, you know, in many ways they were very alive and very connected to nature. But in other ways, they also helped plant a seed of the consumption consciousness. And this isn't judgment. You know, when we're trying to move forward, you know, we're not judging. What we're trying to do is observe, learn, and grow, you know. And the seeds of this consciousness of, okay, how are we going to make it better for our kids? Well, what would be better for our kids? Okay, they wouldn't have to work as hard to get food. They wouldn't have to work as hard to get shelter. They wouldn't have to work as hard to get money. Oh, wait, well, maybe money's the answer to this, because then everything becomes easy. And then so this consciousness just builds, and it almost snowballs on itself to where now we've gotten to a point where we have to stop and take a look in the mirror and say, wait a minute, we've gone almost past the point of no return. Are we going to turn around and start working together and creating different types of a different type of society that's focused on contribution and compassion and sustainability and creating win-win relationships? Or are we going to continue to feed the greed and the fear? You know, and through the separation that I talk about, what I what I'm observing is that some folks are becoming aware of it through themselves, through their hearts, through their observations, through their circles, through the world, the nature around them, and others are becoming more lost and feeding that fear and moving toward a greater place of destruction. And, you know, that's what brings me here to be able to help and host and you know, be a part of this, is to help all of us give out those good intentions, get out, even if it's not, you know, I'm not trying to suggest that we go out and push our ways onto people, but we show them through our love and through our compassion and through the choices that we make that we can be better as a society. We can care for each other. We can have a society that creates opportunity but doesn't destroy its maker, its creator, its mother.
Tiger, I was wondering if you could address what's going on now from an astrological.
Yeah, thanks, because I was just going to go there.
So. It helps, yes.
Yes. So, right now, one of the major transits that we're having, and transit just means that the planets line up in such a way is that they form angles, and those angles release an energy. Now, you could say, well, it's not causal, it's just simultaneous. That suddenly, you know, when apple harvest comes, the universe is appling. You know, it's like a verb. Mm. And that this, what you do with the astrological tool is that you see the synchronistic events that are happening. They're happening simultaneously to the configurations of the, you know, so as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. So right now what we have is an energy called an opposition, or Saturn, the planet Saturn, is opposing Uranus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's across on the other side of our solar system. They're opposing. This happens every 45 years.
Mm.
So this August, I'm going to my first high school reunion after 45 years. We graduated 45 years ago. 45 years ago, the Beatles were starting to grow their hair long.
Mm-hmm.
We're having the first peace marches.
Mm-hmm.
Not too far in the distant future, phrases such as "don't trust anybody over 30 was to come out. "Don't trust the establishment."
Mm.
"Don't sell out." There were a big movement, and I was fortunate enough to see it and be part of it, for human rights and for rights for black people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Martin Luther King. There was a lot of things happening 45 years ago, and we're in the same energetic window now.
Mm.
What I see that's happened now is the collapse of the American dream. Okay? The collapse and the basically, mm-hmm. it's a thought form.
Mm-hmm.
And as a thought form, you know, your conception or your idea of how your society should be gets ingrained into your kids. It's splashed on the television screen. There's a lot of hoopla about it, and basically
you're inundated with
it. Mm-hmm. Mantra. It's a mantra, yeah, for a society.
An unconscious, yeah, mantra, unfortunately, for many people.
Well, it, yeah, well, they don't realize, and this is part of the healing work. I mean, we could talk about healing, because my relationship in my life, I had to walk, I had to go the healing path.
Mm-hmm.
I chose the healing path. I did not choose the path of acquisition, although there have been times in my life I've had plenty of money. Mm. There's been times when I haven't had any. I really appreciate, you know, poverty and wealth, because I've had it both. So I've said, okay, well, I'm moving along that continuum. Okay.
So in comparing the two time periods, 45 years ago, did you say?
Yes.
45 years ago, that was a time of major upheaval.
1964.
Revolution, a whole new...
Yes.
A whole new way of life was literally ripe for destruction. The reasons for destruction weren't as out of control. It came from the young people, largely. and the oppression of the people. They'd had it, but there wasn't a major systematic destruction.
Well, it was different. It was different, though. You know, you had the
you still had,
you had the prejudice. You had, you know, the, like you're saying, the American dream. You know, that idea of the white picket fence and two kids and two dogs. You know, and that's what, in many ways, you know, my grandparents' generation, that's what they wanted for the children. And so now you're seeing all this stuff again. I mean, everything he's saying, you know, I'm really connected to the younger generation. I have, you know, 13 cousins that are younger than me. And, you know, I'll tell you, they are changing the way they think about things. You know, you're seeing the long hair come back. You're seeing people, those exact same words, don't sell out. You know, you're hearing a lot about that in music, you know, off mainstream. You have mainstream and then non-mainstream, and you're seeing that separation, I think, again.
People, younger people can take control and ownership of their awareness. It's another way of looking at it. It's that we can reclaim the control over our awareness and what we choose to believe. Mm-hmm. And as we see the outward, I mean, what happened? People got greedy. It always happens that way. And the Republicans didn't do the regulation that they should have. And they use these fancy kind of forms of, you know, hiding, playing with investments and instruments. And got it to a point where, like, nobody knows what happened now. It just kind of disappeared into thin air.
So
did a third of our wealth, except that's not truly what wealth is.
Right.
If it's something that can disappear inside a computer, that's not wealth. Mm. You know? You telling me how to grow a garden, that's wealth.
Yes.
Okay? Or being able to...
money used to be tied to that. Money used to be tied to that. Money used to say, okay, if we're going to offer a bill, we have gold to back it up. And then that got obviously wasn't an option. And it's almost gotten to a point where currency, which is what it is now, it's an idea.
Go ahead.
So currency is an idea, and you know, if we choose to not give in to that idea anymore, all of a sudden, where does it leave us? And, you know, as far as where we're at and how things came to be, you know, it's indicative of exactly what Tiger said. It's greed and fear. I mean, I remember having a meeting one time and getting, you know, by our management, and they told us, you know, what drives this economy? It's two emotions. It's greed and fear. Mm-hmm. And it goes from the top all the way down. It's not just, you know, the government that's to blame, or just the banks that are to blame, or just any particular person. It is that consciousness from the person who signed on the dotted line and maybe bought a house that they knew they wouldn't be able to afford, or they were going to have a really hard time affording, hoping that value went up, all the way up to the top, you know, from Wall Street and on. And it's about that greed. So, you know, this leads me, I'd love to ask this question at this time, because we're talking about astrology. You know, we're here with Tiger Windwalker, who specializes in astrology and
the mystic astrologer.
Mystic astrologer, yes. And, you know, we're talking about some really great, great subjects here today that I think apply to everybody. And, you know, I want to just ask a question, because it's one of those things I've always, you know, when I was very young, I had a Christian background. And then it was kind of a fundamental Presbyterian Christian church. And then, oh my goodness, I had a bad experience there. We were basically shunned by the church. And then so I moved back to nature and wanted to found my creator through nature, because I was fortunate enough to be in the woods and that environment. And so I really started listening to my intuition and you know, move towards more of what I consider a holistic path, or, you know, a path of openness. So one thing that's always, you know, I'm always been curious about astrology. And I know there's a lot of people that are curious by it, but one of the objections that I get is when I'm talking about astrology is, well, how, you know, I don't like the idea of astrology because it's saying that, you know, I'm predestined for this or predestined for that, and I don't want anything taking away my free will. I don't believe in that. Okay, so that's one of the objections I've heard. So I was reading, and I actually read this book called Mitankyo Asin, or We're All Related, All My Relations, by Dr. C. Ross. And it was a beautiful book. And he really tries to bring the East, Eastern ways, Eastern theology and philosophy, and Western, but not Western like you think, Western Native American history and theology and philosophy, and show the interconnectedness between all the different traditions out there. And he talks about astrology. And what he says, from what I recall, is something about how astrology has to do with the day and time and location of where you're born, that at that particular moment, when you come into the earth, your first breath, your breath of life, when the spirit comes into the body, and that's what they believe, you know, we believe in the native ways, that when you take that first breath, you're breathing that spirit into your body. And that at that particular time, depending on how you're lined up with the planets, and most, and even the sun, and in most cases, people are only familiar with their sun sign. You know, I happen to know my sun sign is Aquarius, born February 1st. So, but there's actually a sign for each planet, correct? And so this is part of the question, a little bit how this works, just some basics. And then also, it has to do with the constellation system that is in line with where you're born in that particular planet, or let's say cosmic partner. Let's say cosmic partner. What your alignment is, and that depending on what your alignment is, that is going to give you certain insights to your traits. Now, I also understand, I watch a lot of Discovery Channel, Learning Channel, that astrology used to be the science. It was the science of man. And that it was, you know, for example, Nostradamus, all of his stuff was based off of astrology. And that it's basically math and measurement and an understanding of the cosmos and how they relate to energy and humanity. So, this is a question that I'm asking. I really would love to know, how does that work? And when, after reading this book, I understood that it's not about predetermining. Astrology is not about telling me what's going to happen. It's about understanding myself so that I can move past maybe some of my negative traits that's inherent to my manifestation because of how and when and where I was born. So if you could elaborate on that, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
It would take many hours to go totally exhaustively into that, but just a couple of things I want to say. Ancient astrologers were more sophisticated than the most modern mathematicians, and all they had were stones, but they managed to make a pyramid in perfect alignment with, you know, with the heavens and the great Mayan pyramids. And we're talking about thousands and thousands of years ago. Unless they had some help from the Star Brothers, which I think is a distinct possibility, how are they able to how are they able to construct the Mayan calendar? How are they able to come up with these astute observations, mathematical observations and astronomical observations? Obviously, their intelligence is greater than ours because we need computers to do it. They did not have computers unless they had help.
It's phenomenal.
From some other source. So now I want to get back to changing our minds. Okay, somewhere we're talking about this transit that we have right now. About being able to change our minds and what is our nature, and how do we navigate through that? Because I'm sure people are listening now saying, well, how do I navigate? You know, I don't even really care if it's right, but how do I navigate? How do I cope with today? Who's going to die today?
Practical.
You know? How am I going to do that? You know, and how do I feel connected? I want to feel connected. I don't want to feel alone like Michael Jackson. He had everything. Obviously, the money wasn't it. He felt alone. He cried because he didn't have a childhood. Well, I don't want to feel alone. I want to feel connected to something. Okay? So, now let's go on to the next thing. Remind me to get back to that. My ruling planet's the moon. Let's just look at the moon. Okay? Twice a day, we have high tide. Twice a day, we have low tide. And a big part of the planet, you know, you can say, that doesn't include us. But crabs, which is my, you know, I'm a Cancer, so crabs and things. And, you know, these critters not only are they responding, not does the water kind of ebb and flow, but all the critters that live in that zone ebbs and flows. And I'll tell you something else. The whales and dolphins actually have an intelligence that's equal to ours, if not superior to ours.
It's vastly different, yes. But it's an amazing intelligence.
They can go on 13,000-mile trips and navigate and never make a mistake. All of them, whales and dolphins, get very animated during full moons. Yeah. People get very animated during full moons. Hospital rooms, the calls, the police show up. It's all happening. So when you say, you know, I don't really want to be controlled, but, well, look, how many of us get in a bad mood? I mean, it's happening. We're in the build-up. We're in the build-up to the full moon right now. Mm-hmm. And there's a time 2 or 3 days before that if you're not up to speed with the latest full moon, you know, I see this one is going to be probably in Capricorn, okay? But if you're not up to speed, then you get shaken a bit. You have to make an adjustment. And, well, maybe have an argument with a loved one or something, or at work or something, or you'll have a headache. And you know, there's an awareness then that's, oh, well, what am I? I need to get a little more alert now. I need to be a little bit more with it. Mm-hmm. So just taking that instance of the moon, which is, you know, the moon is, has a physical effect upon this planet. And then you could talk about other things. Moon as being the ebb and flow of water is the feeling nature. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so all Cancerians have to deal with the feeling nature. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go into that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Well, what's a Cancerian? Well, there's millions of them. It depends on your place of evolution. If you were to look down a spiral staircase, your point of evolution and growth can be anywhere on that ascending or descending staircase. And what you want to do is to be a highly evolved Cancerian, if that's what you are. You want to come up that staircase. You want to make that journey. And you want to be able to answer questions like, well, what is there really to be insecure about? Because this is a common thing with Cancers. They feel insecure. And what is the ultimate form of my nurturance? Because Cancers supply food. They feed people. It's like the mother. Cancers are mother. How do I nurture? How do I feed people? So that's part of like what I'm doing. There's a part of that desire for me to nurture the public on a greater level, more on an Aquarian level. Mm-hmm. You take the good Cancerian mama and put them up on the Aquarian heights and let them do the work, you know?
So given information about the astrological configurations at your birth, once you're given that information, you can choose to either look at it from a more, I guess you might say, highly evolved area, or from a place of lack of awareness.
Well, the birth, when you look at the birth chart, you're looking at the potential in the individual. The transits, as the planets move after you're born and make configurations and make dynamic stress points and release energy, then you grow. Because we grow in resistance. Remember, it's a dualistic system. We grow by having to confront something that resists us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or the heat around us tempers the blade of our character. So it holds an edge. So always in a dualistic system. I mean, I don't know anything else except, you know, if I'm in a state of communion, there's two ways of being. You're in a dualistic system where there's polarities moving around all the time and dynamics and resistance, or you're in a place of bliss because you're in communion. And what I try to do when I take people out, I try to encourage them to find the place in nature, and it doesn't happen immediately. Usually you have to go through a period when you go out into nature, and this would be the same for a vision quest. You have to burn off a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You got the yammy going on all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
It takes a while to do that.
The monkey's on the back.
The internal dialogues.
Yes, and that has got to, but in order for you to open up and to receive something new, or to achieve a place of peaceful communion, you have to go through a process there of letting go of the garments of your civilized life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So again, there's another beautiful duality there, why we need to protect the parks, why we need to take occasions to go into the wilderness and stuff, so we can balance ourselves with what we're doing, the purely human components of the city. You know, there, although you'll have the grass that sneaks through the crack in the concrete, you know, before they hit it with Roundup.
Yeah.
Mostly, man has imposed his way upon through the city life. Man is, that's a man-made imposition.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas nature offers another system, and is part of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it is.
It is truly part of us. And if we distance ourselves from that, and
we distance ourselves from ourselves and from our source.
Yes.
Just the other day, I go to a place nearby, Nicene Marks, and I had many decisions to make, couldn't even think. Went in, I only had a couple of hours, but in those 2 hours, I just sat by the creek, listened to the water, and again, that mystery, something just unfolded, the answers were there. I looked at the veins in a leaf, suddenly I could see the picture appeared, and the answers were there. Yeah. And that's how
it's in the silence. Yes.
But we're getting off. Yeah.
It's in the silence that truth comes through, that our Creator is able to talk to us. You know, when we talk about this, something comes to mind. You know, for those of us who are in, say, the Santa Cruz County area, Monterey County areas, very, very blessed. You know, no matter where you are, you can step outside, and it's not very challenging to connect, you know, with some form of nature. You know, if you can get off into the wilderness, that's ideal. But
that is ideal.
I think that it's important to address the folks that are maybe, you know, stuck in a cement environment. And, you know, they don't have the money or the means to really go out and connect with nature like many people do, you know, in these areas. I think it's important to recognize that there's Creator in every corner, but nature is the easiest way to connect, and we can do that in a city environment through the sky, through our Father Sky. If we have nothing else, at least we can have that sky. And Tiger, I'd like to hear, you know, your thoughts on that too, for those folks.
Well, you can garden. You can grow your roses and your bulbs, and it doesn't cost any money to go to the beach and walk the beach. The beach is a pristine place. Twice a day, it gets cleaned. So it's a wilderness. So, and I've, you know, taken groups out all over, up and down this coast, places to go. And Castle Rock, Big Basin, just the beach. Just walk down to the beach and start walking.
Yeah.
You know. Now, did I answer your questions? I think there was one other area I wanted to go in on the astrology thing.
Well, just, I think, you know, you've given me, from your response, I think that from what you're saying, is it's a combination of things. You're born and you have these certain traits depending on your signs, but then also you've got to look at how things are changing throughout your life, not only inside of yourself, but within the cosmos as well, because the energies, and, you know, when you mention the moon, I think what a great example. You know, another example I think a lot of people can relate to is something as simple as road rage. You know, you go down the road and someone gets mad at you and they throw that anger at you, you're going to feel that energy. And, you know, we have to recognize that energy affects us. You know, whether it's the moon coming around us or whether it's, you know, all throughout the cosmos, that everything's connected and it's always changing. So I think, yeah, you did.
Well, I know what I wanted to do is come back to this Saturn opposition Uranus, because remember we were talking about changing the storyline.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Changing our minds.
Okay. Now, what we did 45 years ago, we started including more, well, there was a shift there, cultural shift, my generation, we had our own music, you know, there was a shift there, and then what we did is by opening up opportunities for minorities to participate at more, we basically opened up the dream to everybody. Now, everybody's not going to say this, but I say it. I say now we're at the point where the American dream has collapsed. And the corporation haven't collapsed. The corporations who are still extracting raw resources from the planet,
which they are.
You know, including the her blood, her oil blood. They haven't changed. But by basically out of greed, by excluding more and more people from the pie, look at it this way. If you have a society based on consumption and nobody has any income, how do you sell your goods? Maybe in another world, you could pay people to consume. So far, nobody's talking about that. This is a major disconnect that we have in our society, unless we're going to go to just a small clique, you know, the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. Right now, 2,000 people control 90% of the wealth of this country. But there's a disconnect there. But what I want to say is this. When a conception fractures and dissolves, you create space for a new point of view. Okay? During all the stuff that's been going on, you know, struggling to meet the mortgage and to advance in your company line and all that, or what? Be a good state park worker? They're going to close them, right? During all of that time, and you made all these sacrifices.
Those stories are multiplied a number of times for every profession you can think
of. Oh, yes. Even doctors. I mean, they go.
It's a treadmill.
They have a terrible thing having to deal with the insurance companies. You know, it's a terrible. They do.
I know my roommate's a doctor.
Yeah, they don't do very much doctoring. They have to do a lot of accounting.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Test taking.
What happens here is that if we can get outside the planet now, let's go out. Just imagine for a moment we're standing on the moon like the first astronauts, and they took that picture of the Earth rise over the moon. That was the most powerful picture that was taken in the 20th century. This was the first time. Oh, look at it.
Tell me.
There is the great weaver of the web. They've got a nice daddy.
For those of you that
daddy
are
long
here in the studio with
down.
Us, yeah, Daddy Longlegs is here in our studio that was recently cleaned.
Oh, beautiful. So come out of hiding. Anyway, that if we can get out there and look back and look at this Earth and to see how vulnerable it is and how unique it is, the big picture is what is it going to take for us to get the story right so that we are one planet, one people, and we can all say Matak Wil Sing. It's going to take something that perhaps native people say it's not up to us. Mother Earth's going to take care of it. She will just shake herself like shaking fleas off of a dog.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay? If the corporations don't respond or whatever. People have to understand, and this is what I learned a long time ago, that in nature, everywhere around us, there's consciousness. The planet, or Gaia, is a living, conscious entity, and we're a part of her. The trees, that's why we can have conversations. Oh, he just fell down. The trees, we can enter into relationships with the trees, with the fish, with all life, and it's our peer. It's not that we're above it all and we get to run roughshod over it and declare it, make a declaration.
We don't even have a stewardship.
Yes.
She's our
so if more people can come into communion with the consciousness and the spirit of this planet and all the living things on this planet, then that will reassure Mother Earth that she doesn't have to shake all the fleas off.
Yes.
When the big changes come.
Few of us.
And so the challenge is to change the storyline from how would you characterize the American dream? How could you characterize it in a phrase? You know?
It depends on who you talk to. Yeah. You know, some people, I've actually asked that question. This is a debate that, you know, I've had amongst peers and friends. And, you know, some people you talk to, most people, I'd say, is family. You know, it's family. And I think it's changing and evolving right now. But, you know, in the past, it's been you work for a company for 20 years. They pay you, you know, a pension. You have a house. You pay off that house. You, you know, retire and get to enjoy your family in your later years. And you know, that dream is changing. I mean, this is something that, is bound to happen. So I think one way to look at it is to say the American dream is dying, or we could say the American dream is evolving, changing.
This brings us back to the importance of dreaming. I feel very strongly about that, and it's just now being addressed. People may call it what their goals are, what they may be, but this is such an opportunity to let our imaginations really flow. Mm-hmm. And to encourage that in our culture. There's been a narrow, top-down dream. Not even a dream. You're told what to think, what to envision. This is an admit. Just the fact that you even use the word,
I believe
what
the
is
shift,
your dream?
The shift has to be a major shift. Because as we come up to 2012, which is the end of the Mayan
calendar.
We
don't use our imaginations or our dreams often enough as a culture.
Yes. And we can, but that's why that picture is important.
Mm-hmm.
The picture of the astronauts took of the Earth rise.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time that we are ever were able to see ourselves hanging out, an orb hanging out in the vacuum of space.
Darkness, yes.
And a beautiful, beautiful
That's
orb.
Ours.
Something worth protecting.
Yes.
Green and blue.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So
this Saturn opposition Uranus, Saturn representing the established structure of things. The businesses, the authority, the government, all of the authority structures, and the ways of doing business, the conventional accepted ways of doing business. And then we have Uranus over here on the other side, which is basically the desires of the people for a better, more inclusive, more sensitive relationship with life, more fulfilling, so that each individual can self-actualize with the support of their neighbors and their community. That's the meaning of Aquarius. That's the self-actualization, which means you get your hopes, dreams, and wishes met, or your and fulfill your and develop and express and articulate your greatest gifts with the support of your community.
Wow.
Okay.
It's amazing that I never knew that, and that is my ruling sign is my sun sign as Aquarius.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Now, that Uranus is the planet of change, and it has to do with technology. So what's going to happen is technology is come around and going to bite these people in the rear ends.
Mm.
You see.
And one of the things I think is really important, because, working in banking, one of the things that drove me was to do public speaking. I would go out and I would try to offer information to the community. My goal was to try to give an inside view. What is, what does the bank look at? What is, your active role? How does the flow of money work? Because part of what we're talking about here, I think, is dreaming. Dreaming is so important. But with dreams, you have to take action. If you dream and dream and dream and never let those dreams manifest into action, then they stay as dreams. And we know that dreaming is and imagination is the beginning of creation. And we know that every single thing that's around us right now, everything that's around all of our listeners at home, it was once a thought. And that thought was manifested into someone's actions. It turned into work, and it was created. When we talk about wealth, so many folks have not really, we talk a talk, we complain a lot, but do we go out, do we create community consciousness? Do we get involved and create groups where we can get together and talk about things? Do we look to others that are experts in their perspective fields for information, or do as the masses, do we look for what's easiest? Do we look for what's cheapest, what's perceived? And the sad thing is through media, just like we were talking about.
Two thought forms here that are beginning to intermingle in that. Do you have a poem, Tiger? I want to call you Chiron.
Yours. Well, we haven't started talking about planet. Chiron yet, but. You said Chiron, we're talking about, there's another astrological aspect that's been happening, and that was the one you can associate with Michael Jackson's death and everything, and then that's Jupiter conjunct Chiron conjunct Neptune. So we're learning by through death is a teacher right now for us. But certainly we for all of us here who have something to heal, because my idea is that what this is about, the holistic movement is about becoming whole. And what would we imagine or dream ourselves being? And we can say this to the whole community. We could sit in a big community circle. This is what I imagine it is for me to be whole. This is what I see myself doing. This is how I would feel, because you have to include your emotions. And I think everybody has to ask themselves that question, because Michael Jackson didn't seem to be a fulfilled person. He was very talented, very rich, very creative. But in the deepest part of who he was lonely, and there was something that he was missing. And for me, when I heard about that, and I looked into his passing and everything, and I share things in common with Michael Jackson, too, and background and stuff, I said, well, I would rather be an ordinary person and at peace with myself than a famous person, totally insulated by my fame and my riches, and be still suffering schisms within me. And I feel like that's our opportunity in a lifetime. A lifetime is not wasted if you can make progress, if you can come into that place of wholeness, where you feel a sense of peace and centeredness when you get confused. And also that quiet place, the silent place, is inside too. When that has been nurtured and developed, we don't really need to go to nature, because that's all that nature gives us anyway.
Yeah.
Nature gives us back to ourselves.
But it's so much more enhanced out there.
Well, of course, because it's beautiful. And we want...
And it mirrors that back.
The Creator wants us to participate and witness all the beauty.
That's why it's there.
Yeah. Just as the Creator needs our voices, because we are the voice of the Creator. So the Creator wants to hear himself or herself speak through us.
And sing.
And so that's what I was thinking, you know, that I think this... Other thing, we don't have to get into it, technically speaking, but there's an energy that's going down right now, and it's going to continue to go down. So this the tension between the conventional and the unexpected is going to continue to occur, because we need to make a big shift, all right? So we need tension and resistance, stuff throwing up in our face. So we have to look at, well, is this working? What's working on our human in our human family? What's not working? What's working on the planet? What's not working?
Can you give some examples? I mean, I have my own ideas, more graphic examples of where something that isn't working is shoved in our face. The California budget
what's
for
not,
one thing right
what's
now.
What's not working is to close all the parks down. That would not be working. Because people need that. Whether they can rationalize it. What's not working is for 50 million people not to have medical coverage. What's not working is there to continue to be poverty in this country.
It is getting more and more extreme. Yeah. The numbers are growing.
It's polarized.
So that's what we're...
And the opposition is a polarizing event. Yeah. But a polarization, it resolves itself in a third line. Okay? A polarization must release the energy, and there will be a resolution. There will be a resolution somewhere where when the dust settles, there'll be a new order. Or there'll be people will have said, oh, well, there were a lot of reforms happened there. You know, Barack is trying to do that. He's trying to create reforms.
Now, do you believe they can go either way?
Yes.
To something more oppressive or to something more free enhancing or liberating?
Well, sure, because if we continue... It just depends on what level you're talking. If you're going to talk about this, just look at from an Indian's perspective. Let's look at the four elements. Okay, let's look at air. Where do you go to get clean air? Lucky for us, we have relatively clean air here in Santa Cruz. But you got to realize the Chinese have multitudes of coal-fired power plants, and they're sending particulates and pollutants over across the ocean coming over here. So we don't really have clean air. If you go over to the Central Valley, it's really bad. Some of the worst air in America. Okay, well, so air is polluted. Okay? Let's look at water. Now we have to drink water out of a bottle. We can't drink it out of the tap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When I was younger, you know, back in the 70s, there was no bottled water.
I know.
Okay? And it has to be chlorinated, so it doesn't taste well. It doesn't taste right. Okay? Or there's not enough of it because there's so many people on the planet. Okay? So that's, the water's polluted and poisoned. Well, let's look at the earth. What's happening with the earth? Well, they say now there's not as much nutrients in the food that we get because the soil has been stripped of its nutrients. So they're chemically putting in it. Large corporations now are putting the chemicals in there, and the chemicals are also getting into the water and making that more polluted, and the chemicals are not good for us, and the actual nutritional content of the food is much lower, even though they can make it grow in 60 days or less.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then you got the fire. Okay? You've got the fire that actually, the fires that we've had have polluted the air, the air.
Mm-hmm.
And because energy is a big issue. Where are we going to get the energy to burn these lamps, to heat these houses? Where are we going to get that energy? Each one of these are in question. Mm-hmm. So when you have the four elements, and our bodies are made of the four elements, when they're compromised, that means we are compromised. So at the most essential level, we have to approach it in that way.
Yeah.
You know, that's the most important. Literally, people starting to die from cancer or for different maladies and stuff that's because of the our environment is breaking down, you know, or, you know, now and then, you know, heating up, you know, that if the
although that's even being debated.
Well, it's
still
it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, they can debate it, but it's true. There is a meltdown that's happening, and the temperature of the planet is rising. And we're gonna it could be a point, like you said, a point of no return, where you know, something will shift, and then we'll just have to go down that probability, and we'll just be stuck with it.
Yeah.
And with 6.8 billion people on the planet, we don't know the holding capacity of this planet under a sustainable program. So if we were, and we could certainly do this with supercomputers, we could certainly figure out what the ideal holding capacity of the planet is. Well, if it turns out to be 2 billion people, and we have 6.8, then what's going to happen there? And now you're talking about forces that are so large, the forces of rectification are much greater than anything that Barack Obama, the Democrats, or Shell Oil, none of these people. It's going to be a ride that we're going to have to take.
Yeah.
And that's why I am encouraging people to find the spirit around them. And if we have to go through death's door, we're going to take it, our awareness, with us. Okay, we'll go like warriors, or we'll go in a surrendered way and quietly and soft. We're all of that. We're the warriors, and we're also the surrendered, quiet people. But when we go, we want to go in a state of communion. We don't want to go in dissonance.
Yeah.
Or as fractured.
Yeah.
Or like poor Michael Jackson, he wasn't happy. You know. And you know, he wasn't at a state of peace inside himself. So I would like to see more of us find that place of communion, self-knowledge, and awareness and sensitivity, cultivating, like you said in the poem, cultivating those qualities of seeing, celebration, and understanding,
yeah,
of forgiveness, you know. And we can easily, you can go to that place on your own, taking a walk on the beach. I have a poem here about the beach that I'd like to read for the folks that, you know, I just want to encourage them to use the resources that we have here, you know. And in those, in that alone time, we can begin to cultivate what is needed to make a shift, to make the turn, you know.
Yeah.
Because the people... that reached out to Michael Jackson, I mean, here's the other side, is his feelingfulness, his sensitivity, his humanitarianism. Mm-hmm. Well, that his death has evoked that in people all over the world. That sensitivity wants to find expression somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't think it wants to find expression through a government. Governments don't get us up dancing and boogieing, you know? It's a whole different thing. But individually, one and one, we can do that. And then, because it's Uranus opposition Saturn, Uranus means it's a community event. We have to do our own personal work, then we got to come around and then share with each other and start to articulate the vision.
Mm-hmm.
Asking the question, well, what do you see? How do you see yourself being whole and being fulfilled? Let everybody in the circle speak to that.
And Tiger, it sounds like everything you're saying is really answering a question that you commonly hear out there when, you know, you get into these conversations, which is, well, what can I do about it? You know, people talk about the unbalance that's taking place and the state of things, and I think people are becoming more and more aware of it, but there's a feeling of disempowerment. How can I make a difference? And I think you're answering that question. It's a shift in consciousness. It's a shift in focus. It's a changing of mind, because that's what begins to plant the seeds of change, so that we can start to create these community circles, create this perception, this way of life that will open the doors for our children, which are ultimately the future, and for them to help pave the roadway to sustainability and change the way that we interact with Earth Mother and each other.
And work on those little wee small voices inside that are like our inner child. How much do we ignore our inner child? When was the last time that we had a conversation or some acknowledgement of our inner child? We need to work with the historical inner child to help alleviate some what pain and suffering that may have been happening before, and to work with those areas inside us where we do doubt, where we don't trust. I mean, we could spend an hour on each one of these things: doubting, trusting, not seeing correctly, not knowing how to love, you know, how to give, expression. We could do it. You could do an hour program in each one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
One thing I want to ask you, in terms of seeing.
Yes.
How do you see? What do you mean?
Okay. Now, when I went out on the lake, and there was an island out there, and my son-in-law, we camped out on the lake. And so our little island was surrounded by water. And there were these little pinnacle rocks you could go sit up on. And so in the morning I would go out and play my flute. And I have this weird thing that happens, that birds come to me and sing to me, and I play my flute. And it happens all the time. It's one of the things that I just really love, you know. Mm. But I was playing the flute, and the rocks, it was reverberating across the lake. And then I was looking over there, and I was looking at the shoreline. And I saw that in the surface of the lake reflected the shoreline that was above it. I was looking at that, and I was like, my goodness, there's some message there for me.
Mm.
And there again, there's a duality, okay? There's the surface, and then the rocks, and what it was a perfect duplication, except that the water, the trees in the water, and the rocks in the water were upside down and backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, when you go into your, next time you go into your bathroom and you look at yourself in the mirror, pay attention and ask yourself, am I really seeing my true reflection in that mirror? When you look in a mirror, you're not seeing what you really look like. Because the left side of your face in the mirror, or the right side of your face in the mirror, is on the right side. It should be on the left side. So like if you're going down on the road and you look back and an ambulance comes, you see in your rear view mirror it says ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
But if you turn around and look at it, you can't read it because it's been inverted. So when we go and just this is something we assume. We make assumptions. We go into the mirror and we think we're looking at ourselves. You're not. It's a direct correlation. It's a direct correlation. It's my left side in the mirror's reflection is my right side in the mirror. Mm-hmm. My left side of my face becomes the right side of my face in the mirror. But there's no dividing line. Shouldn't there be a dividing line? And there, I can see the dividing line on the shoreline,
mm-hmm.
which tells me that there's a difference between illusion and truth. What we do in our lives is that we mistake illusion for truth and we're willing to die for it.
Mm-hmm.
A mystic will jump into the rippling reflection like Monet did. And find truth in there also.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, he knows how to see what's really there above the shoreline because he knows about the illusory quality too. A mystic is somebody that just jumps into what's behind what's making things happen, which is, you know, our interpretation, our perception, and the spirit world. But when you go, and so I was sitting there looking there, and I just thought, whoa, look at that. I could see the rocks reflected beautifully in the water, and it was incredible. But then I realized, we need to understand. These are all Piscean things. We've got Uranus is in Pisces right now, and then the other planets that happen with Chiron, Neptune in Pisces, Chiron in Pisces, and Jupiter in Pisces. So we're working not only with death as a teacher, but we're working with issues of, what's the illusory nature of reality? How do we know illusion from reality? Well,
this is what we're working on right now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you have to become able to see clearly. Now, to me, seeing clearly is also feeling. And when there is an alignment that happens inside me, I know the feeling of truth. I know the feeling of what's true for me. As concentric rings, the pebble of inquiry goes in and hits somewhere into that sensitive consciousness of that of me, and that ripples out. And I've been working on being able to feel and to see and to know the difference between reality and illusion. So for actually another way of positing the question is what will it take for us to be able to see the real reflection of ourselves without the mirror?
Because it's jumping into the illusion.
Yeah.
Dancing with it.
This is the one you could do 4 hours on this one.
Yeah, I'm just going with it. Mm-hmm. And I had an image of you as you were speaking. There's that illusion. You're in a uniform, a mask of some sort. You're dancing with it, going right into it, and knowing that you will come out with what is real. Mm-hmm. And then you'll dive in again.
And we're also, we talk
it's
about...
It's almost like fine-tuning.
Our ego is the master at masquerade and disguise and illusion.
Mm-hmm.
See? So what the mirror is doing is inconsequential, but what our egos do to ourselves, you see, is that's, and part of like the healing process is to, part of the healing process is to go in and explore what ego is. We've all had wonderful friends and people that we trust, and boy, they disappoint us. Mm-hmm. And then you said, I didn't know that side of them. And you got to understand that what the ego does is tries to make excuses for who we fear we are.
Mm. Mm.
The ego creates a different storyline for what it fears we are or would be seen as.
And we have to recognize that ego is a part of duality. And if, you know, this took a long time for me to come to grips with this, but, you know, the ego can be used for negative, and it can also be just recognized that it is what it is, which underneath it all, it's a survival mechanism. It's something this creator has given us so that we seek food and shelter. And if we understand that and go, okay, thank you, then it's like our little hunter in ourselves. We can just go, okay, thank you for the idea, but we need to keep you in check right now. We're going to actually listen to the other side of ourselves, which understands that you are giving into that illusion. And then it doesn't become a ruler of our lives.
I just want to say one thing here. For those of you that are just listening in, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. We're always looking for donations, and they can be mailed to Free Radio Santa Cruz, P.O. Box 767. Is that right? P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. And we're here. I feel like we're just scratching the surface, Sonny and I, with Tiger Windwalker, and we're definitely going to have him back. Where I just am amazed at the levels of depth that we're able to penetrate with him, but we have 15 more minutes, and if anyone wants to call in, our lines are working now, 427-3772, and this is Tiger Windwalker. He's a poet, and I say mystical astrologer from Big Sur. And I would like you to read a bit more of your poetry, because I'm looking at the
clock. Maybe somebody will call in, but feel welcome to call in.
I just now gave out the number. Yes, feel welcome.
Remember we were talking about people have options around here, go to the beach and experience its pristine nature. And so this is a play. This poem, this is where I did a lot of my really major healing, was walking the beaches, when I really had a lot of emotional stuff to clear.
Yes.
Walking the beaches, and, you know, all the way from Año Nuevo and Pigeon Point and all Big Sur and places like that. So here's a poem. It's called On the Edge. Like sand on the beach, I await the tidal flow of your love. Still, prone, stretched in the wind and sun, I am quiet, pensive, and yet available. I know that soon your frothy coldness will wash over me again, to inundate me, to suck at me, to bubble and gurgle around me. In your ebb and flow, my grains collide and separate. Only the sandpipers will witness this. But they will be too busy probing my fringes for dinner to notice our passion. I love the way your waves smash me and rearrange me and clean me and throw interesting treasures of wood, shell, and feather upon my nakedness. This is the jewelry with which you have adorned me for countless eons. Twice a day since always we have met like this, and never have our meetings been repetitious. Lovers must walk this place, and so too philosophers, poets, and people with wounds. Children, surfers, and dog lovers walk and run here too, all of them healed in one way or another in our meeting, our passion, our freshness.
Hmm. Oh, beautiful.
Reminds me of Santa Cruz. Reminds me of home.
I love the passage about, I'm paraphrasing here, but adorning me.
Yes.
You have adorned me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can see the image of our native people, the California natives here.
Mm-hmm.
It is the Ohlone, the shells, the bark, the tule, you know, and the music that they made with that just...
So there's some kind of spirit that resides there. So the, you know, I don't know who that was, a spirit that lives at the beach.
That
a feminine... There's a love affair going on between the water that comes in and the awaiting sands.
Mm-hmm.
A renewal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cleansing, embracing, enfolding.
Mm-hmm.
Loving. It's good. So, Tiger, going back to how things are and astrology that's taking, you know, place and these the paradigm and shift and, you know, us needing to, you know, just to kind of recap so we can let our listeners really have some, you've given us such great insight and we appreciate, you know, it's, it really feels like we're connecting here. And I hope all of you out there feel that you're connected to us as well. We thank you for that. And, you know, we'd like to maybe, you know, with the last 10 minutes, if we don't get any calls in, maybe you could, you know, leave us with some words of wisdom and maybe, you know, some food for thought as we head out into our daily lives and try to bring spirit into all facets of our life. You know, you hear a lot of comments about the two worlds that we live in. We live in our world of materialism and we live in the world of spirit, and how can we bring those two together?
We have in our capacity, we have the capacity as human beings to be a lens to our experience, and in the way we manipulate that lens, we can focus in tightly on the smallest minutiae, things that are important, places and recesses within us where a wounded little one is hiding, waiting for the day that he or she is noticed. So we must use that lens to find those places, those crevices, those crannies where there is something that needs the light of love to be shined upon, that needs the time, the healing, the attention. As we manipulate the lens, we can open up the field and see a larger, a greater picture, a larger tableau before us in our most immediate relations. So as we know how to extend love on the inside, then our awareness and that lens is also being able to focus on the outside to see the result of the work we did. Okay? Have we done good? Have we done some good work there on the inside? Do we feel secure enough that we can be around a braggart or someone who's insecure and not be threatened, and perhaps maybe even extend some of that sensitivity and compassion to that person?
Mm-hmm.
As we know ourselves and our foibles and our own, how our ego has grown to surround us in a myth, we will know how it is on the outside too. And then as we open up that lens even more, we can see the whole community and we can feel it. We can feel the pulsation and scintillation of the community. And not only that, but the life force all around it, which means the beaches and the wind, the clouds, these are all part of us.
Yeah.
You know, and the aspiring little ones who are asking about where we came from, what we're made of, you know, the little ones that need to be brought along. And if we open up the lens even more, we can see that we are one planet. We are one people. It is time. It is time that we come to that place and embrace that. It is time that we can all say that. And truly, as the Bible said, we can set down our swords and make them into pruning hooks. I was raised as a pruner. When I was 8 years old, I was in charge of an orchard. And I used pruning shears all my life. I've pruned thousands of trees and brought beauty and to them, you know, and made them prepare, you know, helped them bloom. I've seen all of that. It's time. We either are going to graduate this time or we're going back the way of Atlantis, and Mu. There are so many out there. If we open the lens up more, and we can see that there's a whole gathering of other races and beings who've come here to support. And I there's one last poem I could end reading it. It's a channeling I did, but there's a whole gathering to support this transition that we're about to engage on. We could fail. And I feel it's going to be like a Steven Spielberg movie. The ending is going to be a Hollywood ending here. But each of us individually, we have to do what we can. Even if it feels like it's an insurmountable thing, we have to do what we can. Can I read that last poem?
Absolutely.
Surely. This is just the first one in my book here. All right, and there we go. Yeah. So, okay. Back in 1994, I did a group up in Mount Shasta, and the teacher said, "Okay, now take out your pencil and paper. You're going to channel." And so, Mount Shasta has a great reputation of having all kinds of beings of light inside the mountain and all that. So, I've climbed it all the way to the tops. I know about what it takes to do that. But I did take the pencil and paper, and this is what I wrote. We acknowledge the difficulties of physical incarnation, and we honor your courage and commitment in being here. There is no more difficult undertaking than yours. We ask you to persevere in the knowledge that you are supported in many unseen ways. Your aloneness is a teacher, and it delivers the teaching with emphasis and clarity. But be not dismayed that you are left alone or are forsaken. We are holding your hand in a great circle of communion. Without you and your great undaunted effort, the circle shall remain broken. We need you so utterly for our own fulfillment that we have dedicated our love and conscious effort to help you remember your connection to the cosmos. We are committed to helping you remember what you chose to forget in order to return to this dimension. Hold your hands out in trust and faith so that we may grasp them and bring fulfillment to this beautiful partnership. Without your efforts, nothing goes forth to fruition. This is the trust that the Creator has given in you. Open your heart to see again with love. Open your eyes and see beyond the illusion. All of this you have called forth into being to teach yourself mastery and oneness. What you embody in this plane will affect all other planes. Many have come to witness this unfoldment, this opening of the temple doors to new dimensions. Their interests are one with yours. Live your lives with an undeterred conviction in everything you do. Dismiss no possibility within or beyond this earthly realm. Let the celebration of your discoveries be broadcast to the far corners of the universe, like the pealing of the bells of the great cathedral of light.
It's amazing. Thank you so much, Tiger. I wish we didn't have to end, but if we must, that's an incredible poem to close.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I would say so.
We thank the spirits of Mount Shasta for...
All right. Mu, yeah. We'll have you back.
Thank you.
You'd be willing to come back.
Thank you, Sonny.
Thank you, Tiger.
It's a Tiger.
Pleasure meeting you and spending
and
time with you.
And that Daddy Longlegs that dropped right into the middle of our circle.
He came down. Well, this has been Cosmos Cruzmos and Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. And with us now is Alan, and he's going to be with you until 4, Cosmos and Cruzmos. Welcome, Alan.
Hey, stay tuned. We're going to have a little music break, and then we're going to be talking about the situation in Iran. We have a Iranian woman here with us who is lives here in the county, but is has just come back from travels there and can give us an update. So stay tuned.